I'm very upset when a patient was operated and the doctor said, okay, everything is fine, forget it, you has been cured. And this is not true. It's a great thing when they can be operated and become tumor free, but nobody can guarantee that all the cancer cells has been removed.
In this preprint, it's quite amazing to see some of the results. And in the conclusion, you note that integrating deuterium depletion into conventional cancer therapies has the potential to significantly enhance survival rates and reduce cancer-related mortality by 75 to 80%.
And the real problem is that the mitochondria is damaged in the cancer cells. So because the damaged mitochondria, no deuterium depleted metabolic water production in the cancer cells, so no break in the system, and this is the reason finally the cancer cells can grow.
Welcome to the Richie Flow Nutrition Podcast. My name is Cameron Borg. On this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Gábor Somaié. Gábor is a Hungarian molecular biologist and world expert in the role of deuterium in cancer. He has published seminal work looking at the effects of various concentrations of this heavy isotope of hydrogen on the growth and metastases of cancer. Gábor's company, HYD LLC for Cancer Research and Drug Development, has been at the forefront of developing deuterium depletion protocols as a synergistic cancer therapy. Their work over the last 30 plus years has demonstrated the profound potential of deuterium depletion in not only cancer, but other disorders, including type 2 diabetes. The identification of this submolecular regulatory system shaped by the relative abundance of deuterium to hydrogen in the body provides a framework with which we can further understand what cancer is and how sensitive our bodies are to subtle environmental information. I've put a brief background on deuterium in the episode notes if you're new to this topic and want an overview first. This is Gábor's second time on the podcast, so I've left a link to our first conversation if you'd like to check that out first. Before we start, please consider subscribing to my Substack, where I share further insights into these podcast topics and provide a depth of information not possible here. This is the best way to support me and the podcast. With all this being said, I really hope you enjoy the episode. Gábor, it's such a pleasure to be speaking with you again. I'm so glad you reached out. There's this new preprint that you've been working on for, you know, this is data from the last 30 plus years, I think. So it must be very exciting for you to sort of get this out to the world. So what have you been up to since we last spoke?
Oh, I think we published a couple of papers since the last talk. I think one of the paper can be very important that we check the gene expression and whether the deuterium level can modify the gene expression of 200 cancer-related genes and over 500 kinase-related genes. And the conclusion was that the higher the concentration stimulated the gene expression and increase the expression of these genes. And from this data, which is combining with the earlier data, so our statement was that the higher DH ratio is necessary to trigger the cell growth. And that gene expression study shows that when we increase the D level, that stimulate the expression of these genes. So it is necessary for the cells to lift up the DH ratio to the threshold. And on the other hand, so when we are applying deuterium depleted water and reduce the D level, that way we can prevent the expression of these genes, which has a key role in the cell growth. So if we compare that, the pharma industry is going to find one molecule inhibiting one kinase enzymes, applying deuterium depletion, we simultaneously can inhibit hundreds of gene expression, which has a very important role to manage the cell cycle from G1 go to S phase and close the circle. So, and this is how everything come together. So the very first data in vitro study over 30 years ago proved that deuterium depletion inhibits cell growth, showing that it's necessary. But even in the first study, we used deuterium level over 150 ppm, 300 and 600, and we saw that stimulated the cell growth. But what is the molecular background behind that changing the D level. So now we can say that the cells before decide to move from G1 and go to the S phase and duplicate the DNA, they have to generate a higher DH ratio, because that simultaneously can manage the expression of hundreds of genes, and then they can manage the whole process, which takes another 10 hours after the cell make the decision moving from G1 phase to the S phase. So this is how it works. And we also published data with patients. One of the last was with a glioblastoma. We know this glioblastoma is one of the worst type of cancer. The survival rate is very low. In that study, we evaluated 55 patients diagnosed with glioblastoma. And typically, the median survival time is 10, 12 months. In our case, when there wasn't any selection, it was, I guess, 36 months, the median survival time. But when we made two groups from the patients, one group, which was operated, received the radiotherapy, and several months later, they had a chance to consume deuterium-depleted water. And the other group was when we could combine deuterium depletion with the radiotherapy. And in that case, the median survival time goes up to 47 months, which roughly 4 months, fourfold increase in median survival time, which suggests how important to integrate deuterium depletion into the existing therapy. So we always see very strong synergistic effect between the radiotherapy and the deuterium depletion. And the reason we think because the radicals, deuterium depletion trigger radicals, and that can kill tumor cells, and radiotherapy trigger radicals, which finally kill the tumor cells, and they are combined. That can be more effective, and that can help a lot on patient survival.
There's so many strings I want to pull in that, but I guess, first of all, it's important to highlight how extreme that increase in survival is in glioblastoma. Cancer therapies tend not to have such large increases in survival rate, and a fourfold increase in mean survival time is quite dramatic and certainly something to pay attention to. And I think over the last several decades, cancer therapy has been looked at, like you said, from a really sort of genetic or biochemical approach. And it seems like this, looking at the deuterium to hydrogen ratio, is a more foundational level to assess the problem at. And it's like the biochemists are looking at it from, you know, they're trying to understand what a building looks like by investigating the bricks. And what you're talking about is taking a step back and going, well, what's curating all of this biochemical milieu around it? And I think that's what's so powerful about looking at, you know, what St. George hypothesized as this submolecular regulatory system that you've taken a step into. I did want to ask, though, first, you know, it's not that easy to define what cancer is. And this is something that I think a lot of people are discussing more now, because we haven't really got a handle on this disease yet. And I would love to know from your perspective how we could best think about cancer, because a lot of people get, you know, treatment and then they're told they're in remission, but then it comes back. And it seems like cancer is more of a state rather than a discrete entity. And by treating the body as if you're trying to treat the body bodily state rather than trying to just cut out a cancer and then it's done, you know, maybe thinking about cancer as a state rather than a discrete entity is a better way of conceptualizing the problem.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah. So what we, I am very upset when a patient was operated and the doctor said, okay, everything is fine, forget it, you has been cured.
Yeah.
And this is not true.
Yeah.
So it takes about 4 or 5 years that from one single cell will be a tumor diagnosed with 1-2 centimeter. And it means there is very, very long time for the cancer to remove the primary cancer and go anywhere, somewhere in the body, and 5 years later will be a new tumor. So yeah, the one balance is cancer cells appear, and hopefully most of the case they disappear because the immune system and because they cannot survive. When somebody was diagnosed with cancer, it's a great thing when they can be operated and become tumor-free macroscopically. So no, CT, cannot see anything on the CT, but nobody can guarantee that all the cancer cells has been removed. And this is the reason that the patients received chemotherapy and locally radiotherapy, just to be sure that all the cells which has left the primary tumor and somewhere in the body should be cured. And this is a good concept, just because nobody can be sure that we cure that, we remove everything. The biggest problem with the cancer that first, very limited the time the chemotherapy can be applied, because the side effect and the very strong toxic effect. And the protocol is patients operated, and there is chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and then the patients are waiting and going back every half year, every year, and checking and waiting that and hoping that there will be no any tumor. And the good thing with lutein depletion that we can apply it. And we, in that paper, we also published over 268 patients who started to consume lutein depleted water, even they were in remission. And the question was whether we can prevent the relapse. The cumulative follow-up time was over 1,000 years, so roughly everybody was followed for 5 years, and we lost only 18 patients, and two of them wasn't related with cancer, but eight of them died, they never came back. So our protocol is, if somebody is in a tumor-free, in remission, consume lutein depleted water for 3, 4, 5 months, have a break. And even everything is fine, after half a year, repeat the cure. And then they can increase the length of the break and repeat again this lutein depletion. So that means that even there are a couple of cells, cancer cells, when there is a 3, 4 months lutein depletion, that can hopefully kill all of them or reject the number of the cells and push it back. And repeating it for several times, that way we can show that these people never relapse and they became tumor-free. And this is a situation now, so we cannot say that, even we are not able to say, we cannot say that we have solved the problems with the lutein depletion, because it doesn't mean if somebody drink lutein depleted water, they will be cured for forever and no any problem with that in the future. No, have to be very careful, have to follow the protocol to be sure that we do not allow the cells, do not give enough long time to start to grow again, and more cancer cells appear and they spread the body. And this is true for the healthy people who believe they are healthy, because everybody knows that those men who died not because cancer, over the age of 60, 60% of have cancer cells in the prostate. But luckily, very few of them became tumorous, has prostate cancer. So it's a very fragile balance in the body, that cancer cells are present, even can be present, but if we can control it and keep it on a low number, that would be fine. And we are very sure that this lutein depletion, integration into our lifestyle, integration to the diet, that would help us to prevent cancer. And the reason we were not able to conduct a study with 60,000 patients following them 10,000 years, by 10 years, but following the cancer patients who had very big chance to relapse, And in that case, we can prevent the relapse. That means that the duodenum depletion will have a very important role in the prevention.
I think one of the frustrating things about cancer is this, the diagnostic side. So, you know, you have patients who are told that they're cancer-free, when really, how could they ever, you know, how could the oncologist ever know for sure that that is the case? And then you've got, in some cases, like, you know, I believe there's been quite a bit of work on mammography, women getting diagnosed with cancers that would have never ended up causing them any issues. Like you said, by the time most people are 60, they've got cancerous growths, but the growth is so slow that it would have never amount to anything in the first place. So there's this diagnostic issue, which I think is quite remedied by the foundational approach that you're taking, which is not to say whether there's cancer or not, but just to make sure that the body is always in a state that is preventing that excess growth from happening.
Yeah. And this is a very tough question. Mm. When to intervene, how long wait? With the prostate cancer, and the PSA is a very good candidate to follow that and to playing that. We have, and even we published paper, we followed the patients with prostate cancer, and the PSA level was high, and repeatedly he consumed duodenum depleted water, and more than for 12 years or 14 years we controlled his. And at the end, okay, we suggested go and receive the first hormone therapy, but we could prevent to get the hormone therapy for 14 years. So, yeah, and so the duodenum depletion should be part of this therapy, just a watchful waiting. And we are following the patients and giving the DW, and we can revert that whole process and reducing number, or maybe we can get a regression with the tumor.
So I think in this preprint, it's quite amazing to see some of the results. And in the conclusion, you note that integrating deuterium depletion into conventional cancer therapies has the potential to significantly enhance survival rates and reduce cancer-related mortality by 75 to 80%. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at all. So can you explain that a little bit about, you know, sort of what that means at a population level?
Yeah. So our company, this HYD company, decided to make the best cancer drug over 30 years ago. The limiting factor was the funding. It was extremely difficult to get funding to proceed. So we completed two clinical trials, one with prostate cancer, and we showed the efficacy, and the other with diabetes. But so just to use out the time, I started to follow patients and recorded, and they were freely sharing with their data. So this is what we evaluated in that preprint now. So we evaluated the data of 2,649 patients, if I remember, and 69. Whatever.
2,649, you nailed it.
49, yeah. And the cumulative follow-up time is almost 10,000 years. And that, over 2,000 cancer patients represent the Hungarian cancer population. So the breast, colorectal, prostate, they are, lung cancer is a high percentage of this population. And as the other types has a smaller part of this. And the question was, what is the median survival time of these over 2,600 cancer patients? And before that, we evaluated the median survival time of the Hungarian population, which is about 2.4 years. Because in Hungary, we have about 70 new cancer cases every year, and we lost 33,000 patients every year. And then the lung cancer, pancreatic cancer, stomach cancer, the median survival time is close to 1 year. So, and altogether, it's about 2.4 years, the median survival time. So, and when we evaluated the median survival time of this over 2,600 cancer population, it was 11.6 years, which means roughly fivefold increase. Then we try to figure out which are the the key parameters we need to follow just to maximize the outcome of the duodenum depletion. So, for example, it is typical for these people that before they started to consume duodenum depleted water, the cumulative time was over 4,000 years. It means the patients were diagnosed, they were treated, most of them relapsed, and at that time they started to consume duodenum depleted water because there was any chance. So then we separated what will happen if we check the median survival time just calculating from the start of the consumption of duodenum depletion. And in that case, we at the first time, we in the first combination, we had 7.6 years, which again, a threefold increase comparing with the Hungarian. And the other question was, in that evaluation, everybody was involved, even those who consumed DW for 1 day, 10 days, or maybe 100 days, or even longer. So then we excluded those who consumed DW not longer than 30 days, not longer than 60, 90, and go that way. And we saw a big increase in the survival time when the patients had consumed for 90 days or 120 days, which means that to get some response and to get some benefit from the consumption of duodenum depletion, that should last for 90 days or 120 days. That is very important. The other parameter was, it's very important, what is the time between the diagnosis and the start of the DW consumption? And we evaluated that they should start within 9 months. If they started over a year, then the median survival time was longer. It means they were overtreated, they were lots of trouble, and they, so all this problem. So it and by the end of that study, so if the patients start to consume DW within 9 months after the diagnosis, they consume longer than 120 days. And in that case, we can calculate that 11.6 year, the median survival time. And comparing with the 2.4 years, it means that roughly in Hungary, we can reduce from 33,000 the deaths to 8,000 per year. That should be the aim we can get. And that should be true, I guess, everywhere, independently where the people suffering from cancer and they are treated. And the big change is that in the last 40-100 years, the therapy add 1 month, 2 months to the median survival time, slowly adding very small increase in the survival. And the tendency and the prognosis is the incidence of cancer will increase and the deaths caused by cancer will increase. Now we say that we can stop it and we can revert and we can be able to reduce the deaths caused by cancer.
How is this information being received? I mean, I think a lot of doctors would probably think this is too good to be true. And, you know, I'd worked at a hospital in a clinic that specialized in lung cancer, and all the doctors that I worked with didn't want to know anything about it. You know, I gave them your book and of course it just gathered dust and no one was really interested. And I think that's a real struggle with what you're trying to do. You know, how has this been received? What do the oncologists think about this?
I guess this is the reason that I had to spend 30 years with that. So now two review papers appear just recently and published by others and summarizing the story of the DW in the last 30 years. And more research institutes and universities are involved in that type of research. And our product is we are selling worldwide, I could say. And so everywhere, even the oncologist can see some very strange thing, that if the patient's consuming duodenum depleted water, they can see that something is different. They are waiting for something and it the final result is completely different, much better than it was expected. So it takes, of course, lots of work and lots of effort to convince and finally to prove it that we are right. The life is not organized on a molecular level. It is so complex, and even that it's well organized, and the life was able to figure out a new level, this submolecular level, changing the DH ratio, and that way simultaneously can send the message to all the molecules, to the DNA, to the RNA, and all the enzymes. And this is how it harmonized everything.
I want to ask you about mitochondria and this idea that, you know, everyone knows that complex four, oxygen and hydrogen, come together to make water. And I guess your theory is that this water is selective for hydrogen over deuterium. It doesn't like having any sort of deuterium in the mitochondria. And given how small mitochondria and how difficult they are to study, how is it possible to confirm the fact that the water inside the mitochondria is deuterium depleted? Has that been done?
So what we have done, that we checked the D level of the different food. And so we took out the water from the food and burned the food to water and carbon dioxide. And we said that the D level what we can measure is the same D concentration what will appear in the mitochondria when the mitochondria burn the carbohydrate, in the mitochondria burn the lipids or the carbon source coming from the amino acids. And it was clear that the carbohydrate produce 150 ppm metabolic water. The fat produce 118, 110 ppm the concentration of metabolic water. So it is clear that the more complex a molecule, the lower the Li level, the deuterium level, because in each chemical step, the hydrogen will be preferred. So that way the D level is decreasing. So this is what we say, and this is what we say, that the ketogenic diet is good, because finally the ketogenic diet is deuterium depletion. But we published the data that we replaced the drinking water of the laying hen with 25 ppm water, and we collected the eggs of the laying hen, and so as they started to drink, we collected the eggs and we took out the water from the white and from the yellow, and then we burned the white and burned the yellow, and after 3-4 months the D level reached the equilibrium, and in that case the water content of the yolk and the eggs was down, and the D level of the yolk was extremely low, just because the animals drinking our deuterium depleted water, so all the chemical process used the deuterium depleted water, and that resulted extremely low D concentration of the yolk. And then we add that yolk to the mice, which had been transplanted with tumor. And it was clear that the mice just eating and adding that deuterium depleted yolk to the food, that increased the lifetime of the mice. And when we even combined it with deuterium depleted water, they live even longer. So it means if the energy source is deuterium depleted, but the mitochondria is using up, that will reduce the D level, and that will inhibit the cells, and then the cancer cells cannot go so fast, because from the mitochondria coming out a very low D concentration of the metabolic water. And that is the way how we can explain this, for the key role of the mitochondria.
To extrapolate from this, is it safe to say that anything that impedes mitochondrial function causes a relative increase in the abundance of deuterium within the cell, and alternatively, anything that enhances mitochondrial function is facilitating deuterium depletion in the right places in the cell. Is that roughly what might be going on?
Yeah, I guess yes. And the real problem is that the mitochondria is damaged in the cancer cells. So because the damaged mitochondria, no deuterium depleted metabolic water production in the cancer cells, so no breaking the system, and this is the reason finally the cancer cells can grow. But, and for example, they say that the Gleevec is a good cancer drug, which is true. It's a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. But finally, it turned out that the Gleevec is good against cancer because it helps the mitochondria. And if the mitochondria works better, that can help, and that can works again the cancer growth. So everything which supports the mitochondria, that would help the people make healthier, has a better energy, and that would reduce the risk of cancer.
I've seen evidence that some of these genes that are associated with cancer, things like KRAS, for instance, they have an impact on cancer growth by changing the membrane potential on the cells. So they work by sort of altering the bioelectric signals within the cells. And one thing you point out is that this change in pH as a result of this sodium hydrogen symporter, this change in pH that it sort of initiates cell division is a pH-dependent phenomenon. And pH, I guess, is another way of saying, you know, relative abundance of charge. Do you think deuterium is involved in the same way that these genes that are associated with cancer, they might be altering the bioelectrics of the cell and thus how it grows?
I think that, so it is sure that the pH level is just the opposite in a cancer than in the healthy cells. And the reason is that there is very strong export eliminating the hydrogen from the cell and became acidic outside. But it means that when there is a very strong hydrogen transport and it's always preferred the hydrogen, it means that it keeps on a high level the DH ratio if there is a discrimination in that process. So how can that, I couldn't say because we never measured. But how important can be the DH ratio? We made an experiment, the very simple experiment. Do you know the aloe deer is an aquatic plant?
Which plant?
Aloe deer. It's an aquatic plant. In one experiment we published, the aloe deer, that plant was removed from the normal water, put it into deuterium depleted water. And what we found that immediately activated the hydrogen transport system. So the plant cells recognized that there is a lower D level and immediately became acidified the outside, and we could measure it goes to alkaline in the intracellular space. So that membrane transport and it's very sensitive for the hydrogen deuterium ratio, and that is somehow is in combination, and this is somehow is organized somehow that way.
That's so interesting, and I think it sounds like this rapid shift in deuterium to hydrogen ratio is a stress, and I think that's really where the effects come from. This stress initiates this large reactive oxygen signal, and healthy cells can sort of deal with it, but the malignant cells struggle, which is how deuterium depletion protocols are somehow selective, which is great because you don't, unlike radiation, where you're targeting everything, even the healthy cells, deuterium depletion protocols only really damage the cells that can't keep up with that reactive oxygen signal. So is that, and I know in your papers you note that people should abstain from taking, antioxidant supplements because it actually blunts the effect because you're actually preventing that stress signal from happening.
Yeah, that's one of the number one rule we recommend people. And the reason is that sometimes I didn't understand if somebody consumed lutein-depleted water, why we cannot see the improvement. Mm. And spending lots of time with cancer patients and talking to them, then it turned out that those who were taking high-dose antioxidant, that prevent the efficacy of this lutein depletion. And then we calculated that should be the reason. And Zubar, professor at the Karolinska, and his co-workers published a paper that the redox balance, we intervened this, and that increased the radicals, and that should be the reason that we triggered the apoptosis of the cells.
I've been thinking about the sort of makeup of these reactive oxygen species. Obviously, they have hydrogens in them. If they incorporate deuterium instead of hydrogen, let's say a hydroxyl radical that has a deuteron rather than a protium, is that going to impact how that reactive oxygen species reacts in the body?
I would say that the reactive oxygen is extremely reactive. And if they find the molecules or another molecules, they will react. So I don't know what would be a specific target, but if this is one thing. The other, when there is an increase in the radicals, immediately turn on the system just to eliminate the radicals. And this is, again, a big balance that the superoxide dismutase level increase and all this system try to eliminate the radicals because it is so sensitive, the system, for this. So I don't know whether that was the answer for your question.
I guess I wanted to know whether the kinetics of the, let's say, superoxide dismutase on superoxide, if the superoxide has deuterium in it rather than hydrogen, is that going to be more difficult to deal with, I guess, from a kinetic point of view?
I don't know. So the reason that the deuterium can be important, for example, a protein structure can be different depending on what is the deconcentration. So I think a couple of enzymes can be more active or more inactive if the D level is changing, because the D bond is always stronger than the H bond. And yep, that can determine whether the question is, which conformation of the protein is getting more active or maybe more inactive when there is a change in the DH ratio. So when the membrane transport, the sodium hydrogen antiport, can increase the DH ratio, that means there will be a new equilibrium in all the exchangeable position in the amino group, in the carboxyl group. There will be a new DH ratio because the sodium hydrogen antiport modified the DH ratio, and that can modify the enzyme's activity, that can modify the stability of the RNA and the DNA, and this is how it works, I think.
That's fascinating, because if that's true, that would have huge implications. Just by changing your diet, you're going to change the basically what the cell has to play with as far as building its building blocks from proteins and so forth. So who knows what the implications of that could be. And I guess that makes me think about supplement companies. A lot of people take supplements that are synthetic. They're made in a lab and there's no deuterium controls, So you don't know whether those supplements are going to be enriched in deuterium, and maybe nature, for instance, like a carnitine molecule that may very well end up in a mitochondria. Maybe nature, specifically deuterium, depletes that molecule for reasons we don't yet understand, but the supplement manufacturers aren't. What might the consequences of that be from, an enriched synthetic supplement point of view?
Yeah, so when I started that type of research, the new idea was that nobody investigated the possible role of deuterium. It means it doesn't... Nobody to care whether it's what is the D level in the water, what is the D level of the food. And now the research we have completed with all the scientists bring the focus that we should think about, and it is very important. And I think this is a question of time when the D level will be controlled in the food, in the water, and all these things, because it is very important, I think, to do it. And so when they use the hydrogen gas and using up to modify the oil and all this food, that strongly can modify the D level of the finally food product, and nobody take care of it.
It's an interesting thing to think about, and I think that's why I'm quite cautious from the perspective of supplements. I went to Gerald Pollack's water conference last year, and plenty of people are talking about deuterium depleted water and the effects that deuterium depletion has on the physicochemical properties of water. You know, different structural configurations can be had. You know, there's different, lots of different things that happen to water based on the deuterium content. And I'm wondering if you have been involved in any of this and have looked at how the relative, you know, ratio of deuterium to hydrogen in water impacts, you know, the specific functionality of water in the body.
Pollack, this is an easy water story. This is what.
Yeah, you're... so I mean, I went to his conference, and he had, you know, I think 32 speakers, and I think most of them referenced deuterium depleted water at some point. You know, they're very well aware that the deuterium concentration of water has substantial effects on how it responds in a variety of different ways. I think the dielectric constant is different depending on, you know, how, what the deuterium content of the water and so forth. So, I was wondering if you'd had any chance to think about the, you know, consequences of that in the body.
I would say that so far, lowering the D level do not cause any problem for the body. This is what I would say. The other, I can say that the reason that there are so high the incidence of metabolic disease and the cancer is that we are not on the optimal level with the D level, with the D concentration, and just because people eating too much carbohydrate and too few of the fats, so we should educate the people, bring down the D level in our body to 125, 130, 35 ppm instead of 145, 150 ppm. Because all the enzymes, billions of years, were adjusted to that D concentrations. This is what we published in a RED study, that so the from the insulin signaling system, the best D level was between 125 ppm and 140 ppm.
Interesting. That
and not the 25 ppm reduced the best way the glucose concentration of the diabetic rat, but 125 and 140 ppm. It means that the cells can modify with 20-30 ppm the D level, and that way can regulate all the enzymes. So this, that would be the message, that we should bring down the D level to that range. And that way, we would reduce the metabolic diseases, we would reduce the incidence of cancer, and that's it. If we can do that, then that would be much more better for everybody living longer in a healthy life.
What's the best way to measure one's status? Is it through the breath?
Yeah. We have a... Can you see that?
Yes.
So this is, so what we could do, that we put some water at this, we put it in the fridge, and when exhaling into that, we can precipitate the water and collect it. And that way we can measure it. And we published a study following the people who consume DW, so we can measure it within a day, the changes in the D level. So the water coming out from our lung reflect the D level of the body. So the kinetic was clear, the lower was the D level they consumed, the faster was the decrease in the D level, keeping on the same D level, it was stable. So that is the simplest way to follow the D concentration in the patient's body.
Is it a good reference to let people know that seawater is about 150 parts per million deuterium? But I think, am I wrong in thinking that something like a Coca-Cola is about 200 parts per million?
We never measure that.
But, I mean, no. Sugar, when it's refined, is going to be a much more enriched source of deuterium. So, and I think, you know, any time you're refining foods that are rich in carbohydrate or starch, you are going to create an artificially high level of deuterium in that food. Yeah, and you have to compensate for that in some way. Given that you have a relatively easy way to measure people's, you know, deuterium levels, has there been a cross-sectional study of people at diagnosis, like looking, you know, what their deuterium levels are at diagnosis, at cancer diagnosis versus a control population to see if they're higher in a cancer population?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Yeah, this is what we should do. So what we have done, when we run the study with diabetic patients, then we measured the D level in the blood. And then at the beginning, it was 146 and 150 ppm. So there was only 4 ppm difference in between the patients. But I don't know if we check the D concentration of the healthy people, whether it should be lower. No, we should do that. And it's a question of time. I guess testing thousands of people, healthy people, and the different diseases, we may find some correlation. So I would say that with a diabetic metabolic disease, population may have a higher D concentration. And those who are not diagnosed with that type of disease, they have maybe a lower one. This is how I think that's a good point. Yeah, we should.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like quite a logical thing. And I think you and I would both, you know, put all of our money on the fact that the healthier people are going to have lower deuterium levels relative to the sick people. You know, it would be really good to have a study like that because it would be quite an important piece of evidence to show. I guess, you know, we're talking about something, you know, at a more atomic level. So clearly we have to start thinking from about quantum mechanics at some point and how these, you know, the difference between a hydrogen and a deuterium might be responding from a quantum biological point of view. Is this something that you have thought about in much detail?
What do you mean, quantum biology?
So there is an emerging field of people looking at how quantum affects things like tunneling in the mitochondrial respiratory chain. And, you know, given the fact that the kinetic effect, the isotopic effect between deuterium and hydrogen is so great that the relative abundance of deuterium and hydrogen in the mitochondria, for instance, might have quantum effects that might, you know, impede on the ability to tunnel. So is this something you've looked at?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it has a key role, the tunneling effect, because so the hydrogen and the 100% mass difference that cause a big difference is in the tunneling effect. That should be good again to check it out and to see.
I don't know how you do it. I've heard Laszlo Boros speak about that kind of thing a little bit as well, and I think given that a lot of, you know, the new ideas about what cancer is really a breakdown in communication between the cell and its surroundings. It seems somewhat logical that perhaps it's sort of a breakdown in coherence that might be mediated by quantum effects. And clearly deuterium would play quite an important role there. I don't know how you would even begin to study that, but yeah, I just thought maybe you had spoken to some people who were investigating that.
So all the what we can see and what we see macroscopically is the results of billions and billions of quantum reaction. So, and the rules are different in the quantum world. So it's but we see the final end of that huge amount of quantum reaction. But it takes time. but I hope we will figure out.
So where is your work heading now? Clearly, we're waiting for this this preprint to be published and peer-reviewed and so forth. What else are you looking at doing, you know, after that as far as research is concerned?
So our aim from the very, very beginning to integrate duty depletion into the existing therapy. That should be the only aim, because if we do not have a registered cancer drug, Dutin depleted cancer drug, then 99% of patients never get access to this Dutin depletion. And we have to educate the oncologist how to integrate, how to use it, how to combine it. So we want to register Dutin depleted drugs. And we are waiting for pharma companies, or we're waiting for investors to proceed with this drug registration and got the approval from the FDA or EMA. And I always hear that this is not the interest of the pharma industry, but this is the interest of the pharma industry, because we are not going to replace the existing drugs. We are going to extend the lifetime, and it means, and we need to combine it. So I never say that those median survival time with the 11.6 years is the results of the Dutin depletion, is the results of the combination surgery, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, immunotherapy, targeted therapy, because everybody received the conventional therapy. We just helped them and supported them with Dutin depletion. So and even we see that when somebody in a very late stage start to consume DW, the cancer cell will adapt to the lowering D level. So immediately there is a strong selection. Maybe we kill 90% of the cancer cells, but what about the last 10%? So this is the reason we have to combine all the facility which help us to make the patients tumor free. So the aim is to get drug, cancer drug, and integrate into the therapy.
I think that's a really good point that we should probably stress, is that you can't just, you know, start taking deuterium depleted water and start drinking it at any concentration and just think it's going to work. There are, you know, there are principles that you have to follow. Remember, this is a stress, and you don't want to give the malignant cells a chance to adapt. And I think that's why it's so important not to do this without any guidance from someone who really knows what they're doing, with a bit of evidence behind why you're doing the specific concentration and for how long and so forth. Feasibly you could get yourself into more trouble by doing it by yourself, I would think.
Yeah, they can diminish big part of the efficacy. Yeah. And this, you know, this is the reason I wrote the book. So in the book, I wrote some protocols, how to combine it and what stage. And this is the reason I try to share the knowledge what we already have.
And how is the demand for deuterium depleted water, you know, been going over the last few years? I imagine it's going up quite precipitously. I've noticed a few more companies sort of join the game selling deuterium depleted water. Are there any, you know, sort of rules about are looking for it?
I guess when I started, the world used up about 1 liter deuterium depleted water for chemical reaction. Today it's about 600 tons, I estimate. We used up about 200, 300 tons, and the rest of the world, the other 300 tons they used in China, United States, Romania, Russia, they are producing deuterium depleted water.
And I presume as this, you know, becomes more mainstream, it's going to become cheaper, hopefully, as more people start to manufacture it.
I guess yes or no. It's a question of the energy, the cost of the energy.
Yeah.
If and of course there are other countries, not Hungary, where the energy is not so expensive, that can reduce the price. But in that case, we have to compare with the cancer drug, the price. And if we compare with the cancer drug and EW in that case, the dilute and depleted water is cheap. But on the other hand, we have to, and we will, I guess, if we can reduce the production cost.
So I guess the key takeaways are really, you know, eat a diet that is in line with, you know, I guess what it would be considered a diet for human beings back, you know, over 100 years ago, that is not rich in refined foods at all. And, you know, do things to support your mitochondrial function, because they are putting in a lot of work making sure that the deuterium levels stay within a very narrow range, I suppose. And, you know, if you're not living a life where that's the case, perhaps deuterium depletion protocols can help you balance that out. Is that sort of a safe thing to think?
Yeah. This is what we should do.
Yeah. Well, this has been such a fantastic conversation. I really look forward, and I think people should go and check out the preprint. I'll put a link in the description so people can read it. It's a powerful study. The book as well, Defeating Cancer, is fantastic. Even the one from 2001 that you wrote, I think, is still relevant today.
But the other is contains much more about the protocols and all this.
I'll make sure I leave links to those, because I think it's such an important part of the puzzle to know about. So I thank you for your unending work, and I'm sure I know a lot of people personally who have benefited from deuterium depletion. So they're all very, very grateful for your work. And I can't wait to see more people starting to realize how important this submolecular regulatory system is.
Thank you. Thank you, Cameron. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this one. If you're interested in reading Gabor's book, watching some of his presentations on YouTube, or finding some deuterium depleted water, I've left all the relevant links in the description of this episode. Feel free to share his work with doctors and oncologists, as this work needs to be more widely acknowledged. I've also left all of my links in the episode notes, so please feel free to subscribe and engage, as there will be much more content like this to come. Again, if you'd like to support my work, please consider subscribing to my Substack, as it is where I share most of my thoughts and insights that go beyond the scope of this podcast. This support really helps me keep all of this going. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Take care.